An interesting train of thought now presents itself if we consider the relations of this inhibition of discharge by the second system to the regulation through the principle of pain. Let us now seek the counterpart of the primary feeling of gratification, namely the objective feeling of fear. A perceptive stimulus acts on the primitive apparatus, becoming the source of a painful emotion. This will then be followed by irregular motor manifestations, until one of these withdraws the apparatus from perception and at the same time from pain. But on the reappearance of the perception, this manifestation will immediately repeat itself, perhaps as a movement of flight, until the perception has again disappeared. But there will here remain no tendency again to occupy the perception of the source of pain in the form of an hallucination or in any other form. On the contrary, there will be a tendency in the primary apparatus to abandon the painful memory picture as soon as it is in any way awakened, as the overflow of its excitement will surely produce, more precisely, begin to produce, pain. The deviation from memory, which is but a repetition of the former flight from perception, is facilitated also by the fact that, unlike perception, memory does not possess sufficient quality to excite consciousness and thereby to attract to itself new energy. This easy and regularly occurring deviation of the psychic process from the former painful memory presents to us the model and the first example of psychic repression. As is generally known, much of the deviation from the painful, much of the behavior of the ostrich, can be readily demonstrated even in the normal psychic life of adults. By virtue of the principle of pain, the first system is therefore altogether incapable of introducing anything unpleasant into the mental associations. The system cannot do anything but wish. If this remained so, the mental activity of the second system, which should have at its disposal all the memories stored up by experiences, would be hindered. But two ways are now opened. The work of the second system either frees itself completely from the principle of pain and continues its course, paying no heed to the painful reminiscence, or it contrives to occupy the painful memory in such a manner as to preclude the liberation of pain. We may reject the first possibility, as the principle of pain also manifests itself as a regulator for the emotional discharge of the second system. We are therefore directed to the second possibility, namely that this system occupies a reminiscence in such a manner as to inhibit its discharge, and hence also to inhibit the discharge comparable to a motor innervation for the development of pain. Thus, from two starting points, we are led to the hypothesis that occupation through the second system is at the same time an inhibition for the emotional discharge, viz. From a consideration of the principle of pain, and from the principle of the smallest expenditure of innervation. Let us, however, keep to the fact, this is the key to the theory of repression, that the second system is capable of occupying an idea only when it is in position to check the development of pain emanating from it. Whatever withdraws itself from this inhibition also remains inaccessible for the second system, and would soon be abandoned by virtue of the principle of pain. The inhibition of pain, however, need not be complete. It must be permitted to begin as it indicates to the second system the nature of the memory and possibly its defective adaptation for the purpose sought by the mind. The psychic process which is admitted by the first system only I shall now call the primary process, and the one resulting from the inhibition of the second system I shall call the secondary process. I show by another point for what purpose the second system is obliged to correct the primary process. The primary process strives for a discharge of the excitement in order to establish a perception identity with the sum of excitement thus gathered. The secondary process has abandoned this intention and undertaken instead the task of bringing about a thought identity. All thinking is only a circuitous path from the memory of gratification taken as an end presentation to the identical occupation of the same memory, which is again to be attained on the track of the motor experiences. The state of thinking must take on interest in the connecting paths between the presentations without allowing itself to be misled by their intensities. But it is obvious that condensations and intermediate or compromise formations occurring in the presentations impede the attainment of this end identity. By substituting one idea for the other, they deviate from the path which otherwise would have been continued from the original idea. Such processes are therefore carefully avoided in the secondary thinking. Nor is it difficult to understand that the principle of pain also impedes the progress of the mental stream in its pursuit of the thought identity, though indeed it offers to the mental stream the most important points of departure. Hence the tendency of the thinking process must be to free itself more and more from exclusive adjustment by the principle of pain, and through the working of the mind to restrict the effective development to that minimum which is necessary as a signal. This refinement of the activity must have been attained through a recent overoccupation of energy brought about by consciousness. But we are aware that this refinement is seldom completely successful even in the most normal psychic life, and that our thoughts ever remain accessible to falsification through the interference of the principle of pain. This, however, is not the breach in the functional efficiency of our psychic apparatus through which the thoughts forming the material of the second mental work are enabled to make their way into the primary psychic process, with which formula we may now describe the work leading to the dream and to the hysterical symptoms. This case of inefficiency results from the union of the two factors from the history of our evolution, one of which belongs solely to the psychic apparatus and has exerted a determining influence on the relation of the two systems, while the other operates fluctuatingly and introduces motive forces of organic origin into the psychic life. Both originate in the infantile life and result from the transformation which our psychic and somatic organism has undergone since the infantile period. When I termed one of the psychic processes in the psychic apparatus the primary process, I did so not only in consideration of the order of precedence and capability, but also as admitting the temporal relations to a share in the nomenclature. As far as our knowledge goes, there is no psychic apparatus possessing only the primary process, and insofar it is a theoretic fiction. But so much is based on fact that the primary processes are present in the apparatus from the beginning, while the secondary processes develop gradually in the course of life, inhibiting and covering the primary ones, and gaining complete mastery over them, perhaps only at the height of life. Owing to this retarded appearance of the secondary processes, the essence of our being, consisting in unconscious wish-feelings, can neither be seized nor inhibited by the foreconscious, whose part is once for all restricted to the indication of the most suitable paths for the wish-feelings originating in the unconscious. These unconscious wishes establish for all subsequent psychic efforts a compulsion to which they have to submit, and which they must strive, if possible, to divert from its course and direct to higher aims. In consequence of this retardation of the foreconscious occupation, a large sphere of the memory material remains inaccessible. Among these indestructible and unencumbered wish-feelings originating from the infantile life, there are also some, the fulfillments of which have entered into a relation of contradiction to the end presentation of the secondary thinking. The fulfillment of these wishes would no longer produce